Go. Hey, it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. How you doing? I give a shit about you. I really do. And you know what? Right now, we all need people who give a shit about us. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit on Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm here every Thursday, 2 to 3. Check out my archives online at radiofreebrooklyn.com. I have one of my favorite co-hosts today, John Reed. He's the host of Race to the Bottom, which is on Radio Free Brooklyn every Saturday at 10 a.m. He's going to be with us in a minute. So we're going to do a real therapy session, but I just wanted to check in and let you know, I'm feeling kind of neurotic. I'm just going to be straight up about it. Right today, this stuff is really starting to get to me. I've been around my husband. I mean, I am not alone. I'm with my husband, but it is getting, it's the anxiety in the air that's the kind of the free-floating anxiety that's been getting to me lately, and I'm not really sure what to make of it. But I do think that this kind of situation that we're all in does lead to some regressive behavior. So that's what I'm keeping my eye on, folks. And I do have my own therapy session later today with a licensed therapist. So I'm looking forward to that for myself. You won't be part of it, but so anyway, let me say hi. Let's bring in John. John Reed. Hi. How are you?
I'm okay. I've wanted to do this show for a long time. I'm excited.
Oh really? Excited that you're excited. What a compliment. I see that helps right now. I feel better already. John, why don't you tell us a little bit about your show? Let me just tell you guys, it's a really interesting show. It's really hard to explain, but it's actually really perfect for the pandemic because you can spend an hour with John and feel like you're hanging out with kind of like somebody that's really comfy and interesting and entertaining. But you go ahead, John, describe your show.
Well, thank you. So the show's kind of taken different forms, and I've kind of given myself the permission to let the show be whatever it needs to be as it kind of moves forward. I used to do the show when I lived in North Carolina, in Asheville, and at that time it was pizza politics and comedy. I would do like a political checkup kind of thing, and talk politics and culture. And then I was a pizza delivery driver at the time, and I would lightly fictionalize my week as a pizza delivery driver and kind of tell stories from the job. And then I would play music. Now I'm a teacher, and I don't really feel comfortable like talking too much about my kids. So,
you mean your students?
My students, yeah. they feel like my kids a lot of the time too. And I've also just, especially since the pandemic and with this president we have, I really have kind of shied away from talking too much politics just because you can get that almost anywhere. And it's just like,
well, we need you to take us away from that and distract us from that. So that's a good thing then.
Yeah. So I've just been kind of talking about life and art and music that I've been into and recommend, and books that I've been,
we've been talking about your family a little bit, and there's a bunch of philosophery people in your family, right? Mm-hmm. So, oh, by the way, guys, both of his parents are shrinks. His father's a psychiatrist, and his mother's like an LMSW or something, right?
Yeah, LCSW. Yeah,
so you can tell me if I'm as good as they are after this. Okay, will you let me know what you think?
Okay. Well, I've never actually been in a It's felt like it, but I've never actually been in a therapy session with my parents. So.
Well, anybody that's been raised by two therapists or shrinks, whatever, needs a lot of help. So I'm here for you, man.
That's true.
And just so people get an idea of your background, you are a very happily married man. I know that from talking to you about, you know, your wife who works with, she has a really worthwhile, like, I'm impressed by her job. Tell us, what is her job? We shouldn't digress.
She works in refugee resettlement. So she manages the contracts of different offices around the country that are resettled refugees.
John must have his shit together on some level because he's married to that woman. How long have you been married?
Yesterday was our second year anniversary.
Oh, that's such a beautiful thing. I'm really, congratulations. That's
Thank
beautiful.
You.
Okay, so you're married, you work as a school teacher. And what grade do you teach?
Next year I'll be teaching 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th grade.
And what subject do you teach?
English.
Oh, great. Do you enjoy that? That sounds enjoyable.
Yeah,
that sounds great.
Especially the school where I work now. It's my favorite job I ever had.
Really? What kind of school is it?
I can't really.
You can't say.
I can't
All right.
say.
All right. Yeah. Okay. You work in the New York City five boroughs, though, right?
Mm-hmm. I work in Manhattan, and I live in Queens, yeah.
Okay. So his life sounds pretty good, right? So what brings you into therapy today, John?
I was thinking about what I wanted to talk about. I have been, my wife and I are starting the process of trying to have a family.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been thinking a lot about death. And I guess most acutely it happens when I think about my parents getting older, and especially because, you know, hopefully if we have a kid, I will be, you know, I would be 41 when the kid is born, and, you know, my parents, I was realizing it last night that by the time my kid is 10 years old, my dad will be almost 90.
Mm.
So I'm just like, I feel this impending kind of mortality with them. And then I just think about my own mortality and I try to like, and then I do this thing where I just think of like how, it's like the idea, it was like in True Detective that like time is a flat circle where like everything has already happened and already will happen. So just, I like think about like all the people in my life and just all their successive deaths.
Wow, that's so overwhelming, man.
Yeah.
Wow, so much going on in there.
Yeah. I just like, you know.
So I mean, to some degree, that sounds natural, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you think about, you're bringing a new life into the world. A lot of people feel that, you know, having a baby makes them immortal or, you know, in some way and stuff like that. But having a baby is something that would naturally bring up, how old am I going to be when I have the baby? Am I going to be around until this baby is a full grown adult? Are my parents, like, all that stuff seems really natural. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But, I'm kind of still wondering, like, so those are all natural thoughts, but how is it affecting you? Like, how do you feel about it? Like, what's going on with that?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think it's natural. I think it also brings up just like previous kind of trauma that I've had. from growing up and from having like a very early appreciation of death that led to a lot of panic from a very young age. Uh-huh. And so, and I've been thinking of now about, like, you know, also what they say about being a parent is that, like, you're there for the kids. So it's, you, like, I'm wondering if I'm going to be able to be less hung up about my own stuff to be able to make a safe life for my kid, an emotionally safe life, mm-hmm. for my kid, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. And provide a little bit more safety than I think I had when in my childhood, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Around some of those ideas and stuff.
Mm-hmm. So that would make sense that would be traumatic, or that would bring up do you want to explain, would you mind explaining just sort of quickly the story, mm-hmm. you told me in the intake about your brother when you were a little kid, when you were three?
Yeah, so one of my earliest memories is my brother repeatedly explaining to me how we're all going to die someday, and when we die it's going to be nothingness, and there's no heaven and there's no afterlife, and there'll just be nothing, it won't even be blackness, because blackness is something, just kept like going until he saw me lose my mm-hmm. shit.
And right, and he was 9 years older, folks. He was mm-hmm. 9 years older, and he still has he's got some problems of his own, but he did this in a very sadistic way. A 9-year-old getting a 3-year-old to understand the concept of death, which is mm-hmm. when the kid obviously did not want to go there. And we can all imagine how traumatic that would be. And you did start dealing it with that later in high school, but it is like something that is really difficult. It's a trauma that's hard to resolve, because, you know, it's just the truth.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing.
Right.
It's right. Like how they say that, like, you know, if you're addicted to alcohol, you just don't drink. But if you're addicted to food, like, it's difficult because you have food issues because you have to eat. It's the same as that. It's like with death, you know, it's like you have to die. So
you're going to die. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, so if you're having panic about death, it is, you know,
you're not alone either, but it's still like, it's something that I think is a real challenge for all humans to integrate into their lives. You know, we all have phobias about things. Like, I have a phobia about vomiting. Mm-hmm. It's fairly easy to avoid that, you know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I do get overly anxious if I feel nauseous. And I think we all have these kind of traumas, but obviously for you, that's a big thanks. Mm-hmm. So you've tried to integrate this into your life, your whole life, right? I mean, you've been in therapy. And so this is a new challenge. This is sort of the problem that's going to plague you forever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of just a different version of it, or a new way into it. Do you feel as you get older that the fear of death becomes more manageable for you?
In a way, so I guess the other piece of, mm-hmm. I guess that what I'm dealing with it that I was telling you before also is that along with that trauma and stuff, I started to kind of have these kind of dissociative feelings and kind of out of body experiences and mm-hmm. kind of on the outside looking in, kind of the observing ego. Mm-hmm. But what I didn't tell you, Lisa, is that in my research, you know, when I finally felt like, I remember literally typing in, why do I not feel like me, like into the Google search, you know?
Wow.
And, you know, like after, this was after college, you know, I'm just like, I've had it, like, mm-hmm. And dissociative disorder came up and stuff, and I read about it. In my readings and research about dissociation, most people do it to like protect themselves from the trauma.
Right.
With me, when I had like my first really big kind of like out of body experience, mm-hmm. dissociative experience when I was 10 years old, it was the most terrifying feeling that I mm-hmm. had ever mm-hmm. experienced. Mm-hmm. And then subsequently from 10 years old until like still sometimes now, like I was telling you, I have a hard time with mirrors and stuff.
Mm-hmm. That you get panicky when you look in mirrors. Or
yeah.
Something,
right? Or like also with this. So as I'm laying in bed last night thinking about death, I also have like this branch pathway in my mind where I can also just be like, yeah, but I'm not me. Like, so I don't really need to worry about this, you know?
So that makes sense.
Yeah. Like I'm not really John Reed. So it doesn't, not that I'm like have some other person that I am. It's not like a multiple personality thing. It's just that like, oh, but I don't have to be this person. I'm this other mm-hmm. spirit or entity, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. So it's that stuff that's like,
So you have a dissociative experience. Does that feel scary and panicky, or does that calm you down?
It's still scary and panicky.
No, does that make you, when you feel disassociated, does that make you more scared, or
yeah.
that's worse?
Ironically, because most yeah. people, like you would think you would dissociate to get out of the thing, but for some reason, it's almost like I tried to dissociate and didn't like get all the way out of my body. I'm like halfway
right
in this
right.
limbo where I can, right. I don't feel like myself, but I'm not fully.
You're still trapped in the anxiety.
Yeah.
I get that. So I wonder, so do you feel strongly about having kids? Like, is this something that you want? Do you have any ambivalence or?
I would really like to yeah.
Yeah, you don't have ambivalence. Well, now your wife, I imagine, she obviously knows what's your feelings and stuff mm-hmm. like that. So that would be the support system there. So mm-hmm. what's that? What's her role in helping you cope with it?
My wife completely like. Has been a godsend to mm-hmm. me in so many ways, but as far as especially my mental health, I mean, she just has been able to balance things mm-hmm. out. Mm-hmm. We've been together for 6 years. Mm-hmm. I'm married for two, but mm-hmm. and she just smooths it out. You know, also, I mean, I also have suffer from depression and just general mm-hmm. anxiety and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I don't have like the highs and lows as much because she's just a really calming.
Because you made a good choice in picking a partner too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good for you. And yes. you know, I'm sure I'm sure she gets a lot from you. Mm-hmm. So what does she say? Because I mean, I don't see any way of completely avoiding. I mean, you're going to have to cope with this, right?
Yeah.
Right. This ain't going away. I'm
no.
sorry. I mean, personally, I'm really sorry that you have to go through this. You, mm-hmm. I don't know you that well. You seem like such a sweet guy and you'd probably be a great dad. Like I have the faith, mm-hmm. but I know like, it's sort of like, it feels like, you know, you have to deal with it, but it's going to hurt no matter what. Like, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter what somebody, you're going to suffer, it's suffering.
Yeah.
There's some suffering in there for you no matter what. But when you talk to your wife about it, does she feel comfortable about it? Are you able to, like, she's going to help manage this, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of this is going to be, unfortunately, I think there's only some. Do you feel like this? Do you feel like you try to manage it as much as you can before sharing it with her?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And you know, thankfully, as I've gotten older, like, I don't really, with that said, I very seldom have to share it with her because mostly I'm able to deal with it kind of in-house.
In head.
Yeah. Because, you know, I think other, you know, listeners or people who have spent their lives with panic and anxiety, like, hopefully at some point you kind of just get used to it in a way and can figure out how to navigate it. And a lot of it is just also, it would sound really annoying, and sometimes it's not, it would sound annoying to somebody who's having a panic attack, but sometimes it does have an element of choice or self-fulfilling prophecy, because I'll definitely notice in my head, like a lot of times anxiety comes when I'm about to go to sleep, I'll tell myself, like a voice in my head will be like, oh, I think I'm going to have a panic attack. And then I'll have one because I said that, you know?
Because you're like afraid. It's almost like you're afraid of it. That's,
yeah.
That's what this sounds a bit like. It sounds like you're worried about being worried.
Yeah.
And that's what's actually worrying you, because you're dealing with something that's very triggering and also unknown.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to point out, you guys, that John is a great example of how to handle mental issues. I certainly have plenty myself and have worked towards what John is demonstrating, which is to try to manage them on your own as much as you can, because if you bring them into the relationship and expect your partner to handle it, it's going to put an extra stress on the relationship. So I applaud you for doing that. I wonder if you're being overly, like, maybe you need a little more help with this. Have you had, like, what is your wife, what is, because this is what I'm thinking like, you have, let's call it a handicap, okay? Mm-hmm. Like, is, you know, like if you were missing a couple of fingers or something, you'd be like, well, he's not going to be able to do this or that. Let's say your left hand didn't work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Something like that. And it is really that tangible, I think, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think...
I mean, it's not going away.
Yeah, it's at some points in my life it has been, but I think I've figured out, so in the, like, if my... part of my left hand didn't work, I figured out how I can still, like,
open
hold
a
pencil and open a jar, you know?
Right. So, but what I'm saying is, I think I'm an unlicensed therapist. I don't know shit, guys, but I think that you were traumatized at an age that was so early on that it really got integrated into who you are, and that you really can't get rid of that. I mean, I just think it was too young. You know, like my fear of throwing up came because as a child you throw up and my mother panicked, and like that's not going away. And I think that you can't feel like it's your fault or that you can actually do that much about it. Do you see that?
Yeah.
You know, so as a parent unit, you have, as a couple, you, as a parent unit, you have this particular deficit. I mean, there's probably a lot of strengths that compensate and all that. So a lot of it is going to be your wife. You're going to need to get your wife to help you with this, I think, right?
Yeah. I mean, we're a good team. She has her own anxiety stuff too. I don't know how much all this stuff really kind of handicaps me as far as like day-to-day stuff. The biggest issue is probably like, you know, laying in bed at night and not being able to go to sleep for a while, and kind of, but with that, even I've just given myself permission to like, be like, okay, let's just
go with it. Let's panic out.
Yeah. What's the worst that can happen? Like, you know, I'll just... my heart will race and then it'll stop racing. And then I can go, like, I will, you know, sleep will come, you know. And also, like, what with what you're saying, just accepting that I'm not, this isn't going away, you know. And I've been able to live a really full life.
Yeah.
Regardless, so it's not like something that I need to be that. I don't have to be afraid of being afraid, you know, like
right,
you said.
Right. It sounds like it's really pushed you to be a really strong person to me.
Hopefully.
I think you've gotten a lot of strength out of that. So I think it sounds like you're really enthusiastic about having a kid, which I think is really key. Mm-hmm. That's what you want. You want to have a, it sounds, frankly, I'm going to tell you something, John. I think you've got this. I think that it sounds, and like, you know, guys, like he's been going to therapy to deal with these issues since college on and off, right? Is that what you said?
High school.
High school.
First in high school and then in college. And then a few years ago, I had this kind of thing where all of a sudden, I'd never had this issue, but all of a sudden I couldn't sleep. And I would have, I went like 4 nights without sleeping. Mm-hmm. And then, because I don't know if anybody has ever had this. You know, when you know when you're going to fall asleep because you'll like have a thought that doesn't, you're like, that's kind of a weird thought. I must be falling asleep because that is almost, I'm like halfway into a dream. You'll be like, oh yeah, my thoughts are getting hazy. I'm kind of drifting off. I would have a thing where I would notice that. And I'd be like, oh yeah, I doubt, like, it's hard to even explain. A lot of my issues are like getting into my head in this like meta way of like thinking about thinking, mm-hmm. you know? So mm-hmm. I would say, you know, I just need to fall asleep. I just need to get into a relaxed state. And then I would say, oh, I'm in a relaxed state. But that woke me back up again to realize that I'm falling asleep. You know,
yeah,
I'm too conscious of the process, like, so mm-hmm. I can't just let it happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about a guy who's too smart for his own good in a certain way. It's really what it is. Cognitive therapy. Have you done that?
Yeah, that's my
last therapist, he
helped me figure out a lot of stuff through cognitive therapy. It was cognitive therapy, but also like he was big on like locating my feelings in my body
mm-hmm.
and not just my head. So like, if you like, how are you feeling? Where, how do you, mm-hmm. how does that make you feel? What do you feel in your chest? How, mm-hmm. like, and connecting it more to my whole body and getting out of like this constant mm-hmm. cycle in my head, mm-hmm. which was really helpful.
Oh, okay. So you get an A in emotional coping, man.
I
mean,
I
you really do. Look at this, guys. See, I mean, I'm in awe. I mean, he's done so much work. Cognitive therapy is just disciplining yourself to have new thought patterns and stuff like that when you really can't do much else. And I think that, you know, I find that really impressive.
With the cognitive therapy stuff, another example of that is when I was saying that, like, it being a choice when you're going to have a panic attack, or like I would tell myself, oh, I don't think I'm going to be able to sleep tonight, you know, and then I wouldn't sleep. Is with cognitive therapy, I realized, just as I have that voice saying those negative things, I can also have a protective voice in my head that says, actually, that's just one story. You know, you can
right.
tell yourself the story that, oh, you're going to have a panic attack. Why not have another part of your ego or whatever come in and say, actually, you know what? I think I might get a little nervous, but I'm going to be able to sleep mm-hmm. and it's going to be fine. Like, mm-hmm. to like, balance that out and get some other synapses firing in a more positive way.
Right, right. So it sounds like what kind of, what do you imagine your issues affecting, like, what are you afraid of? Like, what is an example of something that you might, you're afraid might happen in, like, being a dad? Is it the dad part? Is it the going through the parenting part? Is it reliving your own childhood?
Yeah, I didn't even think about reliving my own childhood, but I think that that's probably a part of it. But I think that, like, for better or for worse, I think a lot of parents try to, like, relitigate their childhoods through their kids, you know? So, like, hopefully, in a positive way, I will be able to right the wrongs of my childhood, primarily of giving my kid more safety and more of a childhood without trauma as best I can do. I guess you also worry as a parent, or I worry that, like, my unconscious shit will just flow into my kid, you know, like I think a lot of parents do. Anything that's why I want to, like, stay in therapy and try to figure out what's really going on inside of me so that I don't unintentionally seep in a bunch of, like, crap.
I want to be your kid. That sounds oh my God, can you imagine if most parents thought like that? Okay, so this is interesting. So I just can't, I guess what I'm thinking about is I'm wondering if you appreciate all the hard work you, like, you should be like, I, you've done a lot of really good hard work, and it sounds like your issues are really, they affect you the most.
Yeah, hopefully. You know, it makes me think of, like, the example of my brother, where his issues, he had to push all of his issues onto me to, it was almost like I was his guinea pig, and he wanted to see, oh, how is he going to really react to the fact, I'm freaking out about the fact that we all die, let me terrorize my brother and see how he reacts to it.
Right.
So I want to get as far away from that as possible as a dad, you know.
Right, but you also don't want to overcompensate either, right?
Yeah.
You have experience. You said you have nieces and nephews. So how is that? How's your relationship with them? Do you have any relationship with children like that, or do you see them?
I see my sister's kids, and I have been a big part of their lives. It's hard because now they're, you know, my sister's kids are now entering adolescence where they don't really want anything to do with anybody.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so.
Any relatives, for any old people, for God's sake.
Exactly.
No way.
So that's kind of rough because I was, you know, very involved in their lives from the time they were babies. You know, hopefully, they'll like come back, you know, to me, you know?
Yeah.
And realize how important I am to them, you know, because I'll like text them and stuff and they won't write back, you know.
That's such a teen.
You guys enjoy your teenage life. I'll be here when you're, you know, in your 20s.
But you keep, like, that's a great thing about, that's what parents have to do, right? You have to just be there and, like, have them ignore you and be mean and do all that.
Yeah.
And you still, but you don't, you still show up no matter.
Yeah. Think of, you know, the other side of the coin of death is life, and just like the idea of bringing life into this world is pretty amazing. You know, I'm the billionth person to say that, but it's just like, it's pretty stunning that, and just, you know, and I maybe I get this from my dad and my brother, but I'm just like, what is this, what is life? What is this consciousness? Like how, and just as real as my life and consciousness is, and, you know, that will be created in this new vessel of a baby. It's pretty, pretty unbelievable.
Yeah. You know, I think about that too, because there are very few times where, you know, everything is so processed now and so pre-digested for us, including like, say, our food. We don't think about life or death when we're eating, you know, animals, even conceptually veganism or whatever. But the thing is, it's very rare that you actually get to see the miracle of being on the planet, or what it means to be on the planet. I think death, I haven't seen any birth up close, but death is also one of those things I have, you know, I've had seen, a, been with some relatives and stuff like that. So I think it's the profoundness of that is just really, you know, Are you concerned about whether you're going to be able to have, you know, whether you guys are going to be successful in having a child? Have you, is that concerning you?
Maybe a little bit. You know, it's, we are older but you know, I have friends that, you know, I'm 40 and my wife's 38. I have, we have friends that, yeah,
that's not old.
Yeah, we have friends who have gone through this process recently. It's so crazy. All these corona babies are happening. You know, and if you can't make it happen, you know, traditionally, you can. There's a bunch of other ways to do it.
Oh yeah, so, you know. Yeah. I don't think that's.
One thing I am have one way that I'm preparing also is to because my wife can't drink, and I've been not drinking too, which has been I think good. You know, I think with all that talk about coping and stuff, especially during COVID, I've definitely used alcohol as like a self-medicating kind of thing, like I think a lot of people have, and I think, you know, and like I think a lot of people have self-reported on social media, probably was I was drinking too much, you know, and just health-wise, and so I'm like 2 weeks into not drinking, just gonna take a break with it.
Oh man, more inspiration. This guy's too good.
I don't know.
So you've been doing that too, right? Yeah. So you're doing everything you can.
Yeah. And yeah, so it's interesting. Like the biggest thing with not drinking is like, you know, as I'm sure you could see, my mind is like
very active.
So sometimes you want to like, I want to just take a break from my own thoughts, and it's hard without, you know, alcohol or any drugs of any kind. Like it's hard to find ways to like take a break from the swirling thoughts. So, you know, that's,
so you're dealing with that on top of everything else. What about, do you go outside at all, or do you, have you been going out, getting some nature?
We've been going on walks, so that's good. And I've been, I started this like exercise routine in that I could do in the house, which is just like sit-ups and push-ups and jumping jacks and just real basic kind of, that I can do in the apartment, which has been great, you know, because like as a New Yorker, we all used to walk all the time.
Yeah, right.
To and from work and the store and the train and stuff. I would, you know, on my iPhone, it was like, I'd walk like 4 or 5 miles a day, you know, before. And now it's like you walk from the bedroom to the kitchen to the, you know, living room.
Right. That's hard too. And also I think the stress of being a teacher right now is very, very difficult.
Yeah.
Right. I think that that seems like something that's really out of your control. Right.
Yeah.
And do you have other, I mean, you don't really know, I'm guessing we don't, that they haven't really announced any kind of firm, your firm plan for teachers, have they?
No, I mean, they're, my school right now is saying that we'll do some kind of hybrid of in-person and online. But I really, really don't think that we should go back in person until we have a vaccine. I mean, it's just, you see all over the country, we're just like tiptoeing back into reopening the economy, and then it immediately, you can't outsmart this virus. If you're around people a lot, it's going to spread. Like it's, there's just,
right.
You know?
So you're dealing with that. I think a lot of anxiety. I think a lot of anxiety, that's under the category of what I call free floating anxiety.
Because
that's an anxious, that's crazy making, right?
Yeah.
I mean, for anybody. So I think dealing with that and also thinking about any other major life circumstance, whether it be having a child or moving or anything, is going to like just, you're in a fucked up situation, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I get all crazy about like what's going on in Portland with these like secret police and,
oh, I know,
Trump.
Yeah.
The idea of like, if we have a kid of Trump being president again, it's just like all that stuff. You wake up and look at your phone and like, that's a lot of anxiety too.
Yeah, you know, I'm feeling a little conflicted because, like, on one hand, I think, and you tell me, but I'm feeling a little conflicted on your behalf because, on one hand, like, I do really want you to be a dad, and I think that's going to be fine, and I think, like, you know, you're going to be a great dad, your wife is only 38, that's not, you know, it's all fine. But this is a really, really stressful time, and I think for you in particular, with, I think like not having, you know, a job that has a certain routine to it and a certain unpredictability right now. I think a predictable way to earn a living, if you have that, you are way ahead of the game, and not that many people have that. And I'm wondering if, like, if you might just think of putting it on hold for, like, I might, if I was in your shoes, I might just take that off the table for now. See what happens, you know, see what happens. But I might just like, because until you get the teacher, your teaching job resolved, like that's crazy making. Like everything else is just going to make your, and not drinking, your life is hard enough, right?
Yeah. I mean, I do know that regardless of what happens with the teaching scenario, that I do have a
job.
You know, and so
that's good.
That's good. And, you know, if it means going into school a couple times a week, I would bet $1 million that if we go into school a couple times a week, we'll do it for a couple months, and then we'll go back into quarantine again. I mean, and hopefully that doesn't involve me getting corona or somebody that I know getting COVID, but it's probably, you know.
Do you have any teachers that you can talk to about it, that you've talked to about that?
Yeah, it's last year was my first year at this school at this new job. So, but I think that I kind of want to try to get the wheels rolling to get us to put together like a petition of the teachers that just says that we would like to.
Do you guys have a group, like a social media group in any way or anything like that?
Well, the English department, we all have like a group
so
chat.
What's the sense from your colleagues?
We're all apprehensive and just hope that
do they feel the way you do? Like I think you don't want to go back. That's what I'm hearing in person.
No, I don't.
You absolutely don't. You don't.
I don't think anybody should go back until we have a vaccine. I mean, you look at other countries. If we could, as a country, we can't do anything together as a country. But these other places, you just pay people to stay at home for 3 weeks, and then you basically have the thing licked. But
right.
we couldn't do that. Everybody right. we have all these idiots that don't want to wear masks and just go on about their lives and are spreading the disease all over the place. Like, until we have a vaccine, it just doesn't make sense.
Okay, so you're clear about that. And are your colleagues also clear about that?
I mean, they're a bit more ambivalent. I think I'm the most strident about it. But I think that they've by and large agree with me, but they're like more like, well, we'll see. But I feel like if I were at the school for a bit longer, I would like organize.
Oh, I see. You haven't been there that long, so you don't want to be on the front lines and making a stink.
I'm not like Norma Ray.
Yeah, I could see that. Well, I think it's, you know, it's a developing situation, but I mean, like I've gone back to is that there's so much uncertainty that mm-hmm. it just all boils into one horrible pot.
Yeah.
How were you doing before the pandemic? Before all this? Were you talking about having a family then too?
We were talking about it, but I think when my wife, she just turned 38, and I think for some reason that was like a mark, because right. I've been ready for a couple years to have a kid.
Okay.
Yeah, and so she's finally like ready
on board.
Yeah.
Was that before or after the pandemic?
It was after. Mm.
We're all rethinking our lives right now,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that hasn't been very long then.
No.
Yeah. I mean, all this stuff. I mean, the other thing, you know, we have to keep in mind that this is not forever.
No.
It's all very temporary. Like this whole COVID thing is, by the time, I bet if you got pregnant today, by the time you had the baby, it would probably be pretty much resolved, right?
Yeah, I hope so. And something that we do as anxious people is time freeze, you know? I feel like the way I feel right now is the way I'm always gonna feel. So I need
right.
to, you know? So
right,
I think
right,
that we,
right.
you need to keep, yeah, that's an right. important thing to remember, is that it's not always gonna right. be this way. I mean, that's basically an anxiety attack. I feel this mm-hmm. way. I can't stop feeling this way. Am I going to feel this way?
Can I ask you a personal question? Do you take medication? Are you prescribed medication?
I do. Yeah.
So that seems like that. Does that help?
Yeah.
What kind? Can I ask you what you take?
I'm on Wellbutrin now, which seems to be doing a pretty good job. I've tried to go off. I've been mostly on meds for my adult life. I've tried to go off a few times, and I will be fine for a while, and then like eventually I'll just kind of fall into like where it's just hard to get through a day because of how anxious I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that you know is because of the mm-hmm. trauma that mm-hmm. that I experienced.
Like, yeah.
It's not just anxiety. It brings up all this like.
Do you think, when you went through that with your brother, it doesn't sound like your parents were keeping an eye on you and your brother, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they weren't aware of what was going on. Is that
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So do you worry about your parents as grandparents?
Maybe a little bit. And yeah, I do.
And what do you worry about?
Well, also my dad can just, he doesn't really have a filter of like what would maybe be appropriate to talk to a little kid about. I remember he would just freak me out with stuff that he would say, and he thinks that he's just joking. Like, I remember we were on a boat with my nephews a few years ago, because they were pretty little at the time. And my dad said to my nephew, "What if this boat just sprung a leak and we all just, you know, just started sinking?"
God.
And I was like, "Dad, you can't say that to, like, they don't know that you're just," he's like, "Oh, well, I was just joking, you know." And it's like, "No, Dad, when I was little and you said that kind of stuff, it would scare the shit out of me. You can't talk like that." Like, but he just doesn't get it.
Wow. That guy's like using kids for his own entertainment, their fear. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Wow.
Yeah.
So, but I think like you would probably be able to mitigate that, right? When you like, don't listen to grandpa. He doesn't.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah, well,
and then you would probably feel like if you were, I bet having a kid would resolve some of this stuff for you too, because if you could protect your own children against your dad or your, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. You're right. It's that thing of like getting the do over and making it, making it work this time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it also makes me wonder why, I mean, it makes me think that that's probably also why you're such a great teacher. Because you really like improving kids' lives. The kids probably love you, right? Do you feel a real connection with them?
Yeah. And I think more than a lot of teachers, I'm really clued into those like socio-emotional stuff with my kids, and kind of can figure out where they are emotionally and kind of reach out to them and make deep connections in ways that I think other teachers who might have more experience than me with the academic side don't get. You know, I think that's one of the strongest things about me as a teacher.
So you're really sensitive. Oh, yeah. Wow. Have you ever thought about, you'd be a great adolescent shrink or child shrink. Have you ever thought about it?
I mean, I think that ship has sailed. I feel like I kind of am.
You kind of are, right?
Yeah. Cause also I'm in it, like as a teacher, I'm also an advisor. Like I have an advisory group. And so we meet like once a week, and I also meet one-on-one with my kids.
Well, I also think it could actually be overwhelming for you if you actually were the shrink, because then you'd also have that much responsibility. This way you have like a bunch of kids and you're doing something productive with them and you're available to them, but you're not like there to solve their problems or for them to be the person they're leaning on, the person. So I don't know, man. I think you've got it worked out.
I also don't want to, you know, I want to do something different than my parents. You know, I didn't want to like also be a therapist after my parents were, you know, you don't want to do the exact same thing.
Well, it doesn't sound like you necessarily want to follow in their footsteps.
No. I mean, there are things that when you talk about like mental health and stuff, you usually talk about the negative things. There's a lot of great positive things about my parents. You know, I love them a lot. So that's like the thing of like thinking about being a dad is like, what are the positives of my childhood that I want to recreate?
Yeah. I mean, I think you have a lot of, I think that, you know, I think one of the things that's good for you to remember is all the positive things you've done for yourself, you know, and the life, like, I think you know it, but that's something you can really lean on, the life you've created for yourself. I also think it's really complicated to have a sibling where the major trauma comes from the sibling as opposed to the parents, because we always, I think psychology is sort of set up to assume that all the problems come from particularly the mother and stuff.
Yeah.
But there are many, many instances where siblings, because you can really fly under the radar as,
yes,
as an abusive sibling, and no one's going to. So all you guys out there that are traumatized by your siblings, you know, like, it's no one's fault. It's just to know where it's coming from, and that it's not your fault.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most important thing. Well, we're going to have to wrap up, but because we only have a minute left, but I think you're a real inspiration. You're actually an inspiration to me to keep my shit together, because you've managed to do so well under so many challenges. And I want, will you let me know when you announce your pregnancy?
Yeah, yeah.
Will you let us know? Because we would, I am looking forward to that. I really am. Yeah.
I'll let you know.
Yeah, you know Noel, one of our other hosts. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're aware he had.
Yeah.
It's very exciting when we reproduce it regularly. So anyway, yeah. I just want to say thanks to everybody for tuning in. Thank you, John. This has been a great, inspiring session. I'm really excited. I think your future sounds exciting, and I know things will work out. I mean, this is all temporary, and stick around, okay? Guys, and go to RadioFreeBrooklyn.com and donate some money, because it's really important for me, for all of us, for me to keep doing Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And please pitch in and help us out during this very, very difficult and very important time. And okay, we did it.
All right.
Yeah, that was great.
That was
great.
Thank you. Yeah,
you know, it's really funny. You're like the worried well. You know, I think you're somebody that really this is my take on it. You're somebody who really does have their shit together. You've got some emotion. You have trauma, but like, I'm really impressed. I have trauma too. Different kinds, of course, but I wish that I was able to manage my shit as well as you manage yours. You really are good at it.
Well, maybe it's just a good
day.
Wait,
I can't hear you, and I'm not sure why. Wait. Oh, yeah. And
yeah, maybe it's just a good day. I don't know. Maybe talk to me tomorrow. We'll see. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I appreciate it.
You're a pretty strong person, and you know, probably good. You're going to be a great dad. I'm excited for you. Do you keep in touch with other people, or are you alone with your wife all the time, or have you managed to?
My wife's parents live in New York, and we've done a couple social distanced picnics. And also we have friends in our apartment building that we've hung out with a couple times, but.
Oh, that's good.
So that's good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway, I just want to say thank you so much, and thanks for your patience.
Yeah.
And, I'm going to try and, I want to try and organize, I was talking to Tom and saying that we need to have at least a monthly Zoom.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, stay tuned, and we're going to be doing that. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. I'd love to see you there.
Yeah.
All right. Have a great day.
Yeah. I love the show. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate it. It's great to talk to you.
Yeah.
I'm all so right. Lonely. I know. It's so good to like.
Yeah.
All right. Have a great day, John.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Lisa.